The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, online news editor of Science, is here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site. So first, Dave, is a story that I saw online earlier this week and was very excited to discuss because, frankly, who is not fascinated by carnivorous plants?
Everybody loves meat-eating plants. And this meat-eating plant is unusual even among the meat-eating plants, which are all pretty unusual themselves. This is a really strange-looking plant. It's called Filcoxia, and it's this purple-flowered plant that grows in patches of white sand in the central highlands of Brazil. Now, what's unusual about it is its leaves actually grow underground, which, when you think about it, doesn't make a lot of sense because leaves are supposed to photosynthesize. Mm-hmm. And why would you put them under the soil where sun really can't get to them? And that's the mystery that started this study off in the first place.
So it sounds like a relatively unassuming plant. It grows underground. We wouldn't really think much of it. Probably doesn't have the spikes that a Venus flytrap would have. What tipped us off that this was carnivorous?
Well, what the researchers did is they took a closer look at these leaves, which are really the only part of the plant that grows underground. The rest of it grows above the surface. And what they found was the leaves contain these sticky glands that have been seen in other carnivorous plants. So the researchers said, maybe these guys are eating meat. To confirm that, they looked under the microscope at these leaves and they noticed tiny roundworms called nematodes that were stuck to the leaves. Now, they couldn't, just based on that, confirm that the plant was actually eating these roundworms. They had to do a little bit more study. And what they actually did was they created this food chain in the lab where they took some bacteria, which apparently roundworms like to eat, and they fed them this heavy form of nitrogen. And the reason they fed them this heavy form of nitrogen is because if you have this heavy form, it's actually easy to track where it goes compared to just looking at normal nitrogen. And so they fed the heavy nitrogen to bacteria, then they fed the bacteria to the nematodes, and then they put the nematodes near the plant. And lo and behold, when they looked the next morning, the plant leaves were covered with nematodes. And when they examined the plants a couple days later, they discovered that the plants suddenly had a lot of heavy nitrogen in them, which means they must have eaten the nematodes. That's the only way they could have gotten the heavy nitrogen. So this confirmed that this very unusual plant is also a meat eater, and it seems to make worms a pretty significant part of its diet.
How did they figure that part out, that it's such a significant part of their diet?
Well, the soil that these plants live in is really nutrient poor, and it's also very water poor too. So there's not a whole lot of other places these plants are going to get their nutrition other than the nematodes.
Do the scientists know how the leaves attract the nematodes?
They don't know that. That's one mystery they haven't solved yet. Why do these nematodes migrate over to the leaves in the first place if they're just going to get eaten? And that is going to have to be answered by further study.
Something to look forward to. And next, we've got an effect of climate change that would really never have occurred to me.
Right. Usually when you hear stories about climate change, it's always bad news. The sea levels rising, the earth getting hotter, more disease, a lot of bad things. This is the very rare, potentially positive climate change story, although it's only positive for a type of lizard known as the three-lined skink. And this is a small bug-eating lizard that's native to Southeast Australia,
where it's already pretty hot.
It's already pretty hot. And indeed, researchers have already shown, not just with this lizard, but with other reptile species, that when it's hot, and especially when the nest itself is hot, it can actually have very dramatic effects on a lizard's biology. The temperature of a nest can change a lizard's size, its speed, and even its sex.
Okay, so those are the effects that we already know. What's new about this study?
Well, in this new study, researchers have found one more effect of a hot nest, and that is it seems to make lizards smarter. And the way they found this out was they took a look at these three-lined skinks. They brought them back to the lab, and they made little nests for them in the lab. And they made some of the nests warm. They were about 22 degrees Celsius. And some of the nests cooler. They were about 16 degrees Celsius. And then they gave the equivalent of a lizard IQ test. What they did is they had these plastic flower pot trays. They turned them over and they cut little holes into them so that they could become little lizard hiding places. But some of the holes they blocked with this clear plexiglass. So from the outside, the lizard wouldn't know which holes it could run into and which ones it couldn't. And then they kind of spooked the lizards so that they would want to hide. And at first, the lizards that were born in both the cool and the warm nests were as likely to run into an open hole as to one that was covered with plexiglass. But the lizards that grew up in the warmer nests learned from their mistakes a lot quicker. As soon as they started bumping into this plexiglass, they quickly learned how to avoid the false escape holes and only go for the right ones. Whereas the lizards that grew up in a colder nest never really learned to make that distinction.
Okay, so this suggests that those that grow up in warmer conditions may have better survival skills. But I can imagine that even too hot a nest could be detrimental, could just fry the egg as well.
Right. Well, that's a really important caveat here. Even though these small gains in temperature seem to be making these lizards, quote unquote, smarter, which could also really be important for their survival, especially if they're trying to escape predators in the wild, there will probably come a point where the nest gets so hot that it's very detrimental to the lizard's survival. So even though this seems like a bit of good news, in the long term, it will probably be bad news.
All right. And for the last story, we've got some explosive news from a recent meeting of the American Astronomical Society.
Right. This is a meeting that's been going on this week in Austin, Texas. And it's produced a lot of stories, and there'll be some other stories you can check out on the site. But this story is one of my favorites. It's about a galaxy cluster known as El Gordo, which is Spanish for the fat one. And a galaxy cluster is an amalgamation of 50 to 1,000 galaxies. So it's this huge concentration of all these sort of galaxies piled up along one another. And El Gordo is the biggest cluster of galaxies that's ever been found.
All right, so we've seen clusters of galaxies before. What's unique about this one?
Well, there's a few things. First of all, this guy is very far away. It's 7 billion light years away, which means that when we look at it today, we're actually seeing it as it was 7 billion years ago. Not only that, that's a time when the universe was only about half of its present age. So this is a galaxy cluster that formed pretty early in the evolution of the universe. El Gordo has a few other interesting features as well. It contains X-ray emitting gas at temperatures of up to 200 million degrees Celsius, which is pretty darn hot. It's also filled with a lot of dark matter. And the total mass of the cluster, just to give you a sense of how big this thing is 2 quadrillion times the mass of our own sun. So this is a pretty big cluster.
Okay, so El Gordo is aptly named. It's huge. How did it get to be so big?
Great question. And what the researchers believe happened, according to new observations, is that El Gordo actually isn't just one galaxy cluster. It's actually the result of two clusters smashing into each other, which would have made it, obviously, a lot larger. What's interesting about this is, again, this would have happened at a pretty early time in the universe, and a lot of astronomers thought this was too early for a massive structure like El Gordo to form, even if it was the product of a collision of two smaller clusters. But the researchers say that simulations of the early universe show that the formation of something like El Gordo is possible, just barely possible, but possible nonetheless.
So our theories of the formation of the early universe are saved for now.
Right.
So what else have we had in the news site in the past week?
Well, Carrie, like I mentioned, for Science Now, we've got a bunch of other astronomy stories coming out of this astronomy meeting in Austin, Texas. A lot of other cool stuff, so I encourage listeners to check that out. Also, a story about the smallest ear ever created. This is a nano ear, and we'll have an item about how researchers made it so small and what it can be used for. For Science Insider, we've got stories about a new controversial proposal to end whaling around the globe. Also, a story about the doomsday clock. This is a clock that's maintained by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. It clicks closer to midnight as they think we're getting closer to global nuclear annihilation or annihilation of other types. They've just moved it another minute closer to midnight, and you can read about why that is. Finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's Science Live is about the controversial flu papers that have been making their rounds in the news. This is a controversy about whether scientists should publish results about modifying a virus that could be used for bioterrorism. We'll discuss that. And for next week on Science Live, we've got a chat about doing science in Antarctica. So be sure to check out all of these stories on the site.
Great. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Carrie.
David Grimm is the online news editor for Science. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, as Dave said, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.